show. And, you know, this is a great topic to discuss about. It, again, it being last week was National Infertility Week. So my guest today is Valerie Baumann. Valerie's going to talk about a bunch of different things that are, you know, not less talked about when we talk about National Infertility Week. How are you, Valerie?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, what made you kind of want to go get interested in this, exploring this particular topic of what we're going to talk about today?
Well, it became part of my life. It was this summer of 2020, a hot summer in Washington, D.C., and I was 38 years old, and I realized I was out of time to become a mom with a partner. It just hadn't worked out in that realm. And I decided to pursue solo motherhood by choice. And I started out looking at the sperm banks, but was not really satisfied with what I found there and wanted to know more and give my child more answers about sperm bank, about my sperm donor and where half their DNA was coming from than I could get from a sperm bank website. And I stumbled across this world that I've kind of dubbed the world of freelance sperm donation, which is, you know, this kind of online space where, you know, with websites, Facebook groups, and dating like apps where you can essentially swipe to get knocked up.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it seemed very odd, you know, at times very seedy, but at the same time, happy families were being made, and I felt like I could maybe have more connections for my child than I would be able to have through a sperm bank website. So as a journalist for 20 years, it was a story I knew I had to tell. I was seeing a lot of bizarre and crazy things. So that's what brought me here today.
For anyone out there considering the path to parenthood, what words of wisdom would you offer?
Well, I think just generally pursuing the path to parenthood. I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with the fact that it's selfish, but I think there's something, it's an I statement to say, I want to be a mom. I want to be a parent. And I think when you start from that point, you start imagining this mini me child who will be just like you. And as we all know, everybody's kind of disappointed their parents in some way or another. That doesn't always happen. Trying to approach it by putting your child first and putting their wishes and wants and giving them every possible option that the world can offer is the best way to go, in my humble opinion. I'm just shy of 2 weeks of becoming a mom myself. So
it's an exciting time. Now let's kind of talk about this freelance donors. Sperm donation is quite a unique concept. From your perspective, do you believe it's a practical choice for those looking to become parents? And would you advocate for others to explore this route?
You know, I don't advocate it. I don't condemn it, and I don't condone it. I think that different people need to explore what's the right option for them when it comes to gamete donation. I think that it's become increasingly popular because the infertility treatment industry and sperm banks are failing people in a lot of ways. Sperm banks have lobbied actively against placing limits on how many children that they are allowing donors to produce. They claim to have industry-wide standards, yet they don't have any formal way to track how many children are produced. My sperm donor finished donating after helping create 10 families. Now, that may seem like a lot, but you have families created through sperm banks that have, you know, 100-plus siblings. So that's not really satisfactory for me. I think my kid deserves a chance to actually have meaningful relationships, should he choose to, with his siblings. I think that, and promoting anonymity for decades as the only and preferable choice for sperm donation is hugely problematic. We understand as a society now that adopted children understandably sometimes crave answers about where they came from. I don't understand why that concept hasn't been extended to the donor-conceived children out there, and why banks and their fertility industry create such obstacles to giving kids those answers.
Well, you think about everyone that's going now, 22andMe, and all the different, you know, genetic testing to see your relatives and people that could be relatives. It is a considering fact that's maybe 100 people, 200 people, that horrific story of that one OBGYN that ended up using his own sperm to have 300 children. You know what I'm saying? That from the different using his own sperm, so that you have genetic issues and different things based on such a large amount of people that were conceived through the sperm. So I agree with you that this could be a different option for sure. When it comes to choosing a donor, how can you distinguish between someone who might be considered a bit creepy and someone who's genuinely well-intentioned?
I think the only answer there is taking your time. It scares me because I see in these Facebook groups, women will post, "I need a sperm donor tomorrow." Okay. That is not an ideal way to go about this. You need to take your time, get your sperm analysis done if necessary. A lot of people would skip that if the donor has produced a number of children, but obviously you want to get STI testing and you want to get genetic testing as well. But even more importantly, you want to ask a lot of questions. In my book, Inconceivable, I list, you know, more than 25 questions that I would just use as a starting point with potential prospective donors. I want to know, what is the donor's motivation? Why are they doing this? Do they have some Genghis Khan-esque drive to populate the earth? Are they trying to get easy sex from vulnerable women desperate to have a child? Or are they motivated by something a little bit more altruistic? Are they, you know, scratching an itch to have, you know, a few more children than they could have financially with their immediate, you know, with their wife, with their family? You know, have they helped a lesbian, you know, couple who are friends to reproduce and then realize that it felt good to help people? You also want to ask, you know, get a lawyer, ask the tough questions like, if I was to die, would you pursue custody from my family, you know, of this child? Or if you were to have a freak accident and a few years from now and couldn't have any more children of your own, would you suddenly feel different about my child and want access to my child in a more formal way? There's just so many questions and so many things that you should know. Sperm is not sperm. This is DNA. This is half the makeup of the human being you're going to make. You don't want to mess around with a decision like this. It's all sperm is not created equal. So exactly. Taking your time doing the vetting.
But especially particular testing to see if they have like any background of health issues. So many different things that we're getting more and more health conscious, meaning like, are we going to end up with certain learning disabilities? We're going to have certain situations where maybe they're, God forbid, a serious genetic disease of some sort, you know? So I think that you're right. Just going to a sperm bank, you're really kind of trusting the process. And that's hard because they could be lying. It could be falsified, so many different things, and you can't do the research, right?
Well, there's a famous case. The Zytex sperm bank got in trouble, and it was publicized, you know, about 2 years ago that there was a sperm donor they allowed to donate for 15 years. He was one of their most popular donors. He was purportedly, you know, had a PhD and was, you know, fantastic musician and a doctor and all these things. Well, it turned out he was actually a convicted felon and he had schizoaffective disorder, which a lot of the children he produced ended up developing major psychiatric problems and ended up having, you know, suicidal ideation, behavioral issues. And so you can't necessarily trust a bank to do that vetting. That said, you also see these problems in the world of freelance sperm. In the most horrific case I saw, there was a man who produced 12 children through sperm donation on these websites before it was discovered that he was a sex offender. Oh, so you want to do background checks on these people.
Right.
You really want to know what you're getting, but it's hard to trust the sperm banks and it's hard to trust, you know, some random stranger on Facebook. As an investigative journalist, I felt like I trusted my ability to do the digging. But if you're not willing to do the research and really do your due diligence, it's probably not the path for you.
No, it definitely isn't. And, you know, and you, so you're talking also in vitro and different things like that. You're still running into this situation potentially if, let's say, your partner doesn't have the sperm and you're still wanting someone else because they're not swimming either, there could be an issue with both the woman and the man, right? Where then you have to go to a sperm bank still. But how can you trust that? That's just got to be crazy. And I told you about some of these horrific stories of people making sure that they have so many kids out there, which is ridiculous. It's just a terrible thing. So reading your book is really going to help any one that wants to have a child, which really opens up. You talk about single women and also the LGBTQ community and couples. And that's a lot of books have never shed light on this, have they?
Yeah. And I think it's important to look at. I think that there's a lot of people who feel failed by the fertility industry, both the clinics and the sperm banks. Most sperm banks, I mean, if you are African-American and you want a Black donor, that's, you know, when I looked at the four biggest sperm banks, that made up roughly 2-3% of the donors available. If you are, let's say Korean and you want a Korean donor, sure, they may have some Asian donors, but they're going to say, oh, well, you know, it's Vietnamese, it's Asian. It's like, no, I want somebody who shares my heritage. Asian is not Asian is not Asian. So the limitations on race are there. I spoke to a number of sources in my book that talked about encountering prejudice because they were members of the LGBTQ community. One woman, you know, tried to talk to her doctor about her wife and she seeking a sperm donor. And the doctor just shut down the conversation every time. And it became clear she wasn't comfortable with supporting non-heterosexual families in their family building. And then as a single mom, you know, I went to a clinic and, their slogan was, building families one couple at a time, which fair, that's how families are traditionally made. But every time I went in, they would say, where's your husband? Where's your husband? Oh, and it's like, goodness. Have you read my file? Which is fine. It feels like they're, you know, you're spending thousands and thousands of dollars for people who aren't catering to you and aren't, you know, there to serve you. And the clinics create huge obstacles for women who want to use a known sperm donor who are prioritizing giving their kid answers about where they come from. They push the sperm banks on you and they want to charge thousands of dollars more to vet your sperm when you're using a known sperm donor. Right. So it's just obstacle after obstacle. And the clinics could make it safer to use a freelance sperm donor, both legally and just in terms of health, if they didn't throw up all these obstacles, but they aren't willing to do that.
And it's no guarantee either. That's the other thing I'm sure you talk about in your book. There's no guarantee, especially last week being National Infertility Month, that there is no guarantee, right, that you're going to end up pregnant.
Spend tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah. I mean, the percentage, it depends, varies based on age and any number of factors, but I mean, I'm a great example. It's been about 4 years since I started my fertility journey.
Oh my gosh.
And then, you know, dozens of, you know, inseminations and IVF and one miscarriage later, I'm finally less than 2 weeks from having my child. So, you know, buckle up. Infertility is a long journey. And everybody thinks, you know, a little sperm will make your belly swell, but that's not always the case. I would have spent at least $30,000 more if I had been paying for sperm the whole time in the past 4 years.
Wow. So alternative opportunities, people, I'm sure one reason why you wrote the book is also for people to reach out to you. So you can help lots of people that aren't getting the right advice. And it's a shame that people discriminate against people based on their beliefs, which is not fair because we as a society, if we can serve everyone, that would be the best situation, right? And it's too bad that they look at certain backgrounds and say, oh no, we're going to treat you differently. We're going to treat you like this. And this is why your book needs to shed light on this so that you hear these stories. And because of you're a journalist, you can be able to fight for them and be their advocate, right? That's another big thing you want to do.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of problems to be fixed in the fertility industry and the sperm bank industry. And I think that you know, even more than that, I want to elevate the voices of donor-conceived people. I think that, you know, we're creating humans when we're, you know, out there buying sperm and trying to get pregnant. And we really need to put those kids first and prioritize their wants and needs as we make decisions about how they're going to be created.
All right. Best place people can purchase your book and learn more about you. Where can they go?
You can get my book at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and anywhere books are sold. Inconceivable.
All right. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.